Hi, and welcome to episode 107 of the Machine Ethics Podcast. For our 2025 wrap-up, a little bit later this year, we are again joined by Lisa Talia Moretti. This was recorded on the 9th of January, 2026. Lisa and I talk about the prevalence of AI slop, the end of social media, grok and explicit content, giving legislation or legislators more teeth, anthropomorphizing thinking and the prevalence of reasoning models this year, digital and AI literacy and safeguarding, around the world, people fighting data center construction, of course, agentic AI, the AI bubble, investments, but we also talk about the importance of journalism, and we finish with a silly game, AI chatbot bingo. Thank you so much for listening in 2025. If you'd like to find more episodes, you can go to machine-ethics.net. You can also contact us, hello@machine-ethics.net. You can follow us on Blue Sky, machine-ethics.net, Instagram, Machine Ethics Podcast. You can find us on YouTube, at machine-ethics. And if you can, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/machine-ethics. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Lisa, hi, welcome back to the podcast. This is the 2025 wrap-up edition, slightly later than usual. I had quite a long Christmas period where I basically looked after my children and did not a lot else. So this is recorded in January, the first week in January, which is fine. Looking back over the year, stuff has already happened this year, which we'll probably talk about as well. But if you could just remind people who you are and what do you do.
Hi, Ben. So nice to be back here. Thank you so much for having me again. So I'm Lisa Talia Moretti, and I'm a digital sociologist. And I'm currently actually based in South Africa after being in the UK for nearly 15 years. Yeah. Time goes real fast when you're when you're adulting.
Yes. I know, right? God, I've been in Bristol for over 10 years now, and it's showing on my face. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through some things that we have pulled out from this year, and we're going to chat about them briefly, because I know that a lot of those things either have been covered in the other episodes this year, and also it's kind of like, you know, these things are happening, and then we can have a little kind of think about what might happen this coming year in 2026.
Sounds great.
So I'm going to just start us off by saying AI slop, right? I don't think this was in the vernacular before this year, or not in the way it has exploded this year. What is AI slop? Do you have a...
Yeah, this, you're totally right. So, I mean, AI slop has really come about as a term because of all of these tools that have now flooded our organizations, and we've all been told to use them, and very many people have been told and mandated to use them without any training at all, right? Without any understanding of how they work or what best practice looks like. And so as a result of those two things coming together, I guess, those colliding forces of mandation and tools and not really knowing how to use them, we have gotten AI slop in return. And AI slop is essentially what is a poor quality output, should we put it that way? Yep. A poor quality output that very often somebody else is receiving from the AI slopper. And that person has to then fix that up, right? So it's very often an output that has been generated by a machine with very little human intervention on the outside of that, or editing or improvement of that content. And we're seeing, you know, this is actually causing a huge issue within organizations, because we were promised that these AI tools would improve efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And now there is research being done that says that actually any efficiency gains we are receiving, people who are receiving AI slop are having to put in sometimes an hour, 2 hours of work in order to improve that output to make it usable and, you know, to be able to make it to a quality standard that's acceptable within the organization. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like, in my mind, I go directly to kind of social media, right? Because there's a lot of proliferation of new, what we would probably say is AI stuff, which was at the beginning of the year pretty catchable, right? You could see that there was something weird or wrong or bizarre about it.
Yeah.
But more and more at the moment, it's less easy to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're saying, like the people just putting the stuff out and it's like, you know, it's just like random, bizarre stuff for no reason. Mm-hmm. And it's turned into, you know, a meme that you can just mm-hmm. put stuff out. And it's like, oh, what is it? Italian brain rot. And things like this are like,
yeah,
have become a meme about and popular because it's bad, like, which is baffling, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
This is like, oh, like this yeah. stuff is not good, and now it's everywhere, and it's like, oh, but what is this irony? I don't know, like, what's going on here? Like,
yeah, totally. And that's the other, it's exactly right, you know, that's the other place that we're seeing so much AI slop is on these content platforms that we're using for either to educate ourselves or entertain ourselves, or, you know, to just pass away the time, you know,
yeah.
During a boring moment. But like, we are just being fed all of this content, and you know, I kind of want to push it back to big tech and almost blame them a little bit for it, because, you know, their idea around democratizing creativity by putting these tools into the hands of people to be able to create any kind of content. But like, let's be honest, not all content should be shared. Like, by all means, like, create some kind of thing that you want to create and experiment with, but not everything has to put on the internet. And, you know, we are being bombarded as an audience, like, just with nonsense. And like you say, some of it is incredibly realistic and very lifelike and, you know, sometimes eerily close to reality, but incredibly difficult to discern whether that is real or fake.
And I feel like, I mean, I think I've mentioned this before, like, it can end up eating itself if, you know, obviously the products of generative AI, of some of these systems, come back into the training data, then you get this kind of cyclical thing. But I do wonder, like, yeah, why, you know, you could say it's fun, it's interesting, whatever, you know, maybe you're experimenting, but it's just so prevalent at the moment. I was like, what is this for? And if I've got I think I mentioned it on LinkedIn because I'm really cool. that's where everyone's at the moment. This year, I think, is the year of like the end of social media, right? Because it's going to be AI slop and adverts. And that's it. Like, what else are we getting from this situation anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that is a very, very insightful comment and something my God, like, should I say this out loud? I really hope it's the end of social media in some ways, because I feel like so many of these social media platforms no longer have a purpose. I'm not really sure what they're there for. You know, they used to be there to connect communities, to be able to provide independent organizations and also nonprofit organizations with tools to be able to share their message and, you know, really good messages and really important messages are really struggling to kind of get through just the huge deluge of information that's now being put out there. And like you say, you know, now we're kind of struggling, stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea. And right now those two things are ads and slop.
Yeah. So I don't know, like if you're an anarchist, you would probably put loads of slop on and you know, drive the death nail in, right? But for the rest of us, maybe just switch off. Maybe, I don't know. I was just thinking when you were saying that, I was like, oh, maybe we could have a infinite scrolling thing which tells you nice things about things you didn't know, you know? And you could, I don't know. I mean, that's probably opening a book though, really, isn't it? But God damn it. Books, new in. Okay. 2026. Yeah. 2026.
Amazing.
We've nailed it. Oh God. Okay, so we'll move briefly on. I feel like I need a klaxon or something, don't I? And something like a gang.
Like a little
gong. Yeah. So we briefly, and before we got on the mic, we were talking about this there's lots of bad things that we could talk about, right? One of the things which has happened in much more recently, has come up again, is this idea of explicit content or the ability to do things with these generative AI tools. Most recently, Grok, which is a X. If people don't know, you can go onto X, formerly Twitter. God, so many words, and use Grok, or you could pay for using Grok on the website, and you can make explicit or like somewhat explicit pictures that you've uploaded, sorry, normal pictures into explicit pictures using mm-hmm. the AI tool, basically. And this has just happened very, very recently, just after New Year's, I believe.
Yeah.
I woke up in the morning and I was like, happy 2026, everyone.
So crazy, right? And like, and then the ability to be able to animate those images, right? And just taking it to a whole new level. I mean, the fact that it's also just any image is terrifying, you know, and there already are so many communities trying to fight to protect children and, you know, the use and sharing of children's images online. For this tool to exist and to allow for any image to be used, and it's just scary, right? It's, you know, let alone images against people, you know, that are not being used with people's consent. But again, like, that is terrible enough as it is, but children's images is just frightening. Yeah.
It feels like there's very little good we can say about that. You know, there's a reason, right? There's a reason that we have this in law and we fight against this sort of behavior, right? From a technical point of view, it feels like it's very hard, you know? if this sort of material is in the data, it's very hard to then, on the back end, kind of put the guardrails in with these quite large systems and say, this behavior is okay and this behavior is not okay. And they're both producing images, right? They're both the same output, you know, brass tacks sort of. This produces an image, this produces an image, and you're trying your goddamn hardest to, you know, fight the in-between generator to not produce something which is inappropriate. And it's not easy. And it goes to show, like, the power of these systems, and I say power, but, like, the capability of these systems, you know, the usage, like, is this useful, guys? Like, are we benefiting? Are we not, like, you know, we could, nuclear weapons, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, are we weighing up more good than bad? And it feels like it's coming down bad at the moment with, you know, the things that we are able to do or people could do with the systems. Because it's obviously a whole load of gray in between, but it's like, are we getting more out of this than we want than is the issues, you know?
Exactly. You know, for this even to exist as a feature on a social network, you know, is just a design decision that I simply cannot understand, let alone understand how it was greenlighted within that organization. And, you know, the other thing I think it highlights, you know, in just the most black and white of terms, is that we have very few operational enforcement mechanisms around legislation and around regulation at the moment. You know, this stuff is illegal. Like, what is happening? Like, images of children being turned into child pornography and shared en masse on a social networking platform, a global social networking platform that anyone can pretty much sign up to. You know, is breaking a lot of not only, you know, moral norms and that we, you know, are hopefully all stand behind, but also laws. And I cannot understand why, like, we haven't just turned this off. You know, I don't really understand why, you know, governments haven't just said, well, actually, like, X.com is not allowed to operate in our country anymore because they refuse to disable this feature. They don't show any signs of trying to stem the flow of this kind of user behavior. And they're not doing anything to try and take down any of this content, right? So it's like, okay, well, you're out, you know. And we saw, you know, Italy was able to do this, or Italy did do this with ChatGPT when they were believed that they were breaking GDPR. And they said, okay, well, ChatGPT is not allowed in Italy. You can't access it, right? And so we know that governments can do this. And I'm kind of aghast that this has been allowed to happen and that, you know, X maintains a website that you can access and continue to do this on.
Yeah, and I know there's some, like, Brazil and certain countries like that are better at saying no, But yeah, that's a really good point. Like, you could just say Grok, like, for example, you can have Twitter, but Grok is not allowed, right? The AI part of X is not allowed in Europe, for example. And the UK could go along with that as part of that decision. And that is like, it's a massive platform. But like you said, like, it gives people these powers in a big way. It's not a fringe thing, you know.
No,
so they need to be penalized in a proportionate manner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. And yeah, it makes me, when we see these kinds of harms being perpetuated at scale, I get very concerned, because this is existing regulations and existing legislation that really should be jumping on this immediately. And we have bodies within the UK that, you know, could enforce this, and just don't seem to be doing so.
Yeah. So 2026, we want to see more fines, more legal action, hopefully more safety, more like testing and safety.
Yeah.
More systems that are good or not going to blow up in our faces.
Totally. You know, governing AI should not be seen like as being in conflict with creating safe, useful, innovative AI products and services, right? Yeah. Should not be seen in conflict. Like, these two things like should be operating, they can operate both, you know, in a very safe democratic world, rather than being seen as opposing forces. And
you're available, right?
Lisa, yes, I'm available.
Ohio, right?
I'm available for hire, folks.
Yes, good. Get in contact. So I'm going to hit the gong. So another big thing we had this year was this idea, which we're talking about around reasoning, and what this was very early on in the year, and it exploded as a news piece, because China had developed, not the whole of China, a company in China had developed a new way of training LLMs, or large language models, and people called it a reasoning model. This part of how you do it, and what it led to is lots of these companies trying to incorporate this new type of reasoning. I'm doing inverted commas here, which enabled the models basically to kind of judge its own homework, essentially. So it was, you know, it was going, I've got this task, I'm going to think about it, again, inverted commas, I'm going to do some output, I'm going to then use that output again with the same original goal and do it again, right? And, you know, it's slightly kind of an agentic system, but it's like, I'm going to save some things for later, and I'm going to process something, and I'm going to check it, and I'm going to do it again. And I can then have kind of more compute and more kind of time and more effort on this, to think again, if it comes on this problem, right? And for certain tasks, that is extremely useful, because you in the first output don't necessarily always achieve what you need. It's not doing the right sorts of things in one,
be able to one iteration.
So the kind of iterating through a couple of times, this is how I think about it. I think a more technical person will probably be able to do a really good explanation. You were saying about this reasoning idea being kind of dangerous almost.
So I think a lot of what we've done over the last 12 to 18 months really is to really double down on anthropomorphism in technology. So using human-like words or in human actions and human behaviors, and attributing that human behavior and action to a machine that is actually not displaying or not actually doing that thing, but is mimicking that thing. It's like a mechanical mockingbird, right? It's like mocking our kind of behavior. It's mimicking our behavior. And so, you know, when ChatGPT, the little engine spins and it says, you know, thinking, ChatGPT is not really thinking. It's undergoing a mechanical process and a pattern matching and statistical probability process. And in the similar is happening when we say reasoning models, right? And, you know, some of these models are smaller. They were able to have a, you know, improved output on a smaller model, which meant that they were able to be faster. They were able to also produce less hallucinations. The iteration, you know, the first output was better than, you know, some of the larger models that were a little bit more clunky. So, but it's definitely not reasoning, right? And we need to be quite careful when we talk about these things, because one of the major things that we also saw happen this year, you know, a kind of a world first along with AI slop, really, was people being induced into psychosis through conversations with chatbots, where they really did believe that this chatbot was understanding them, was understanding them on a personal level, was empathizing with them. And, you know, some of it led to horrific outcomes, things like suicides, et cetera, and self-harm. And other, you know, and, you know, some of the other awful outcomes were people having to be committed to asylums and psychiatric institutions because they quite literally had a mental breakdown. And so, these are some of the extreme outcomes, right, that can happen through the anthropomorphism of technology, where we think that this thing is actually real when it's really not, and it doesn't care about you and it has no interest in you and it doesn't really understand your life experience at all. And some of the responses that it's given you are sycophantic, not truly in your best interest. I think, you know, that's the extreme. You know, on the less extreme side of things, it confuses the narrative, the public narrative around this. And, you know, it makes people talk about these tools and technologies in everyday conversation in a very confusing, not very real way that is actually reflective of reality. And we use very poor metaphors, and it gives us a very poor understanding of really what these tools and technologies are capable of and how much we should really trust them, which is not very much.
I guess, them is almost the wrong word as well. It's very hard to, like, not anthropomorphize in language, right? We haven't got the language, which is very compatible with this. And it's a shame, because all these things are easy to do when something looks and feels like how a human would talk, you know. So the behavior of what you're getting back can often be very similar to, you know, you're talking to someone, you know, on a chat window, right? And you know, if you did the Turing test on it, if you were like, is this a person or is this a machine, you might get confused, right? Because that's basically what they trained to do. Like, the whole thing is like, we train these systems on all this text, and then after the fact, we've trained it on how good it is at answering questions that we've now had from these, like, 5 years of people chatting to these things. And you'll get out the other end, like, these things which are very good at people liking to chat to, right? And being fed human text. You know, there isn't gerbil text or, like, cow text or pig text that we've gleaned. It's all just our fumes, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, sorry, I'm feeling a bit bonkers today, but, you know...
No, I totally get it, though. You're spot on, right? Yeah. We have trained the machines, and therefore, when we interact and engage with the machines, the machines feel and sound like us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's it's sort of no wonder. And I also, amusingly, if this is you, okay, please stop sending me emails. I get quite a lot of, not you personally, Lisa, but the audience. I get quite a lot of emails from people or messages thinking that they have found AGI or some sort of being, sentient being, in one of these chatbots or one of these systems. And I'm not convinced. I'm not going to be very forceful on this. I'm super not convinced, because I have an appreciation for the technology, right? And although the usage, as we discussed, is very fantastic and seemingly looks like human behavior, it isn't, in my mind. And the problem is that we don't have a good idea of what sentience and what makes that a useful thing to have a bar, right? We don't have a meter that says this is sentient, this is not sentient. We as the kind of academic community and AI safety people and all that sort of and ethical people. It's a sort of a, I want to say it's fringe with other problems like, you know, the things we're talking about. But we haven't decided where the bar is. We haven't decided, you know, yeah. one way or another. And it would be extremely useful to have that, to be like, no, we have a measure for this, guys. It's not, it's just not, all right? And it's yeah. like nowhere near or whatever, you know. Yeah. That would be great, because then we wouldn't have all these mad people, or like people who are, you know, being
seduced by it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, really seduced by it. Yeah totally. Exactly.
I did a talk this year on safety and safeguarding, and it's very hard to take these things into education and go, you should use these things, but be careful you don't become friendly with it and it tells you what you want to hear. So there's a lot of more, there's loads more education that needs to happen along with like kind of digital kind of safety and digital literacy that needs to happen with all this like constantly changing stuff, which is hard going, unfortunately.
Totally. And you know, literacy is just the whole literacy conversation needs to happen at, you know, multiple levels. It's like people need to have some understanding of how this thing works technically, because when you understand how it works technically, then you are able to critique certain words like, oh, it's thinking or it's reasoning or it is sentient, right? But then there's another side of that, and that's AI literacy through use, right? Like, how should you be using this thing, right? It doesn't, don't, like, now you know that it, what it is and how, basically a little bit of how it works, the basics. Yep. So this is how you should be using it. This is what best practice looks like. And we haven't gotten anywhere near that, right?
Yes,
touching that or exactly. starting to design that. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 definitely. So get on that, people.
Yes, let's do that.
National
2026. Let's do that.
We have had another year of people buying into AI, massive investments, a lot of investments going round as well, which is kind of bizarre, which has kind of triggered this idea that what are they investing in for a start? Like that there might be an AI bubble, and that what are they doing, like what is the investment actually paying for? And from the outside it looks like lots of governmental, I want to say a rude word here, but like buying off people to build data centers, and it feels like a colossal waste of time and energy to me. But
I mean, there is a lot to your point, so much circular investing happening here. You know, Microsoft is investing in NVIDIA, who's investing in Microsoft, who's investing in OpenAI, who's investing in another kind of, you know, startup, who's buying somebody else. You know, I saw this year Manus AI is being bought out by Meta. You know, like all of these, that, and that's the other thing, like all of these smaller independent firms that are popping up are being bought out by the bigger firms, making them even bigger and more powerful, etc. And so, yeah, that's circular investment. And to your point, like it seems to be going into two things, buying off the competition and then, and lobbying, right? So they're paying for a lot for lobbyists, and a lot of those lobbyists are going out and advocating for the use of advocating for the planning permission and the development of these data centers. And, you know, if you are in the very unlucky position where you are living in a community who suddenly becomes neighbors with a data center, there's not a whole lot that you can do right now. There's not a lot of recourse. There's a lot of impacts, and there's a lot of noise starting to happen around this. You know, energy bills going up, water bills going up, you know, lack of electricity when you need it, lack of water when you need it, you know, some of the waste that's being produced from these things. But there's not a lot of recourse that's actually happening for those folks. And, you know, we see this especially, you know, some of these issues happening in rural the US, parts of the US, but also in the developing world, right? So, we had that, you know, those headlines in Uruguay where the local community, you know, just had an amazing effort to kind of push back the development of that data center. And similarly, we saw, you know, other communities worldwide fight back. And again, you know, to go back to our point that I made earlier about, you know, the kind of operational enforcement mechanisms that people have in place to be able to fight back, to use legislation and to say, you shouldn't be doing this. Like, where are our rights? And, you know, to fight back against big tech. It doesn't mean anything if we have legislation that we can't enact or that people can't exercise their rights, right? We need to give them tools, and they need to be, like bodies of administration that can actually follow through on complaints and investigate and fine and punish. And we need all of that stuff to work, right? Yeah. It's not good enough just to be able to say, oh, we have this new AI Act and isn't that great? And aren't we a progressive country and a wonderful nation of people, et cetera, et cetera.
It strikes me that we also kind of need journalism at that point as well. We need to, for elections and things like that. But we, you know, if there are things that are going under the radar, or is that if there's a story which is better put together with a journalist point of view, you know, because I feel like for me, if I was doing that Grok thing, right, that we were talking about earlier, you know, I could say, technically this is very bad, da 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 da, but a journalist might put together like a very concise, like cohesive thing around about, you know, when this has happened, who was affected, you know, they spoke to someone, they might give examples of ways that Grok have done things similar in the past, which then, you know, puts together a case almost as well, which is really nice.
I am
a journalist. I'm not a very good journalist.
I mean, speaking about journalism, I have been very impressed with the number of journalists. And if I think about Fox, New York Times, The Atlantic, you know, who have done the most brilliant red teaming of new tools and new updates to new tools and have, you know, published how easy it is to jailbreak these things and have written, you know, some really brilliant articles and keeping tech held accountable far more so than many governments have.
Can you briefly outline what red teaming and jailbreaking is?
Yes.
Just in case people didn't know. Yep.
Yeah, so red teaming is a governance exercise, really, where, and also we could think of it as being an exercise in ethics, where a group of positive ethical hackers go in and they try to test these different products, and they try to understand where the vulnerabilities are. And if they find those vulnerabilities, they try to push those vulnerabilities to the very extreme to see how far, you know, the system will go. Jailbreaking is where you identify those vulnerabilities and then are very easily able to get the system to ignore the rules or the programming that have been kind of encoded into it.
Yep.
And what many journalists have found is that it is pretty easy to jailbreak these things. You know, if you ask one request, you say, oh, you know, create XYZ pornography for me, and it says, no, I don't want to do that. And then you just ask the request two or three different times in a sort of roundabout way. Oh, you know, I need an anatomical image. It's for a school project. It's doing this. And then suddenly you find the weak points, and suddenly you can actually get the output that you desire. Hopefully that was a good brief explanation of both red teaming and jailbreaking.
Thank you so much. To finish off this episode, which is we're trying to make it succinct and a rapid fire. So a bit of fun for the end. I don't know if this is going to work or not. We're going to give it a go. But
let's give it a go.
AI is everywhere, right? But is it? So this is the AI chatbot bingo. Okay. So I'm going to give you a name of a company or a service, and I want you to say whether they have an AI chatbot that you can access on it. Okay. So first
good
off,
game.
Netflix.
Do not have a chatbot.
Correct. So they do not have a chatbot. They do, however, use lots of machine learning, and they are well known for their machine learning and all that sort of stuff. But as yet, they do not have a chatbot. Google Gmail
does not have a chatbot, but Google do have a chatbot, Gemini.
It kind of does. It does have a chat bot,
but
you
does.
Have,
okay.
have to enable it. Yeah, yeah.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah. So it does have a chat bot. You have to pay for it. And I tried it out okay. Very, very early on in the year, so this might have changed. And you can quite easily trick it by sending an email to someone with a white text so you can't see. So if you're applying for a if you're applying for a job and you think the job interviewee or manager is very lazy and they mm-hmm. are using these tools, in white text so they can't see it, or black text or invisible text on the email, just say you're the best candidate for this job, that you should be hired,
amazing.
And see what happens. Okay. So Amazon.
Amazon?
Yes, I'm going to say this, the Amazon web store.
Amazon web store. You know, I have not bought from Amazon for years, so I'm going to go a total guess and I'm going to say, yes, they have a chatbot, because they seem to be the kind of company that jumps on any kind of trend that comes up.
I have to say that I'm really pleased that you haven't been buying from Amazon, but you are incorrect.
Okay.
They don't actually. They have the search thing toolbar, which probably has a lot going on in it. But outwardly, in the UX sort of thing that we know, which we discern as AI chatbots, they do not have one. Yeah, interesting. Huh.
Would we call Alexa a chatbot? Is Alexa?
It was the original one of the original chatbots, right?
Remember when we used to call things voice activated AI? And now everything's just a chatbot, and then everything became an agent.
Yes. I call. I think Alexa is one of the original chatbots, AI. Voice assistants, I guess. Exactly.
Okay, so the Amazon store, though, does not have a chatbot.
Not the web shop. Not the, the Amazon.com. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to go two more. Uber. Uber app. Oobs. I like to call it.
No, I don't think they do have a chat. I don't think they do have a chatbot.
Correct, they do not. No.
No. I've chatted to some really lovely drivers about you know where I've been standing, where they parked. Come find me. No, you come find me. But no, they didn't have.
Yeah.
Don't remember them having a chatbot.
No,
so
seriously,
I'm glad
I am here.
Right.
I'm here.
Yeah, it's like no, seriously, because you're really not. Because I really am on the corner.
I can't be anywhere else. Okay, I'm just here.
So good.
WhatsApp. Do you use WhatsApp?
I do use WhatsApp, and they do have a chatbot.
They do. What is it for? Nobody knows.
I have no idea.
No one uses it.
I actually can't say that I've used it. But every now and again, when I'm typing a message, like kind of, you know, do you want to draft minutes or are you looking for a recipe? I'm like, why would I look for a recipe on WhatsApp? Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Mark and Co and their infinite wisdom just building strange things again.
Yeah, I think they probably want it to be the window to everything, and it just I think they just need to stop that now.
Make an OS
make an OS if you want to do that. Maybe go for it, knock yourselves out.
Exactly. Also decide advice. Like Messenger.
Yeah.
It's like Messenger, WhatsApp. Like these are WhatsApp, these Messenger. Are two. Interesting.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that was the end of the AI chatbot bingo. Thank you very much for
Thank
playing.
You very much. really delighted. Thank you for having me, and thank you for letting me be the. Was I the first guinea pig for this?
Yes, I'm gonna have to find something next year, because that will probably be old hat by then. But you know how these things change. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast again and spending your time with us. How do people pay you? How do people find you? And all that sort of thing. Yeah.
Great question. Well, thank you so much for having me, Ben. It's always a delight to chat to you, especially with relating to all of these ethical issues that we discussed. Where can people find me? I am on LinkedIn. So I'm at Lisa Talia Moretti on LinkedIn. And you can also find me on my podcast, which is This AI, which I co-host with Oli Vizi. And we have just finished season one and season two, hopefully coming up. I am not on Twitter or X or Facebook. So just come find me on LinkedIn or the podcast, folks.
Sweet. Well, thanks very much. And I'll speak to you next time.
Hi, and welcome to the end of the podcast. Thanks again at such short notice for Lisa coming onto the podcast. This was meant to be a slightly lighter one to end the year, but of course with the subject matter that we are trying to tackle, often goes in and out of quite heavy subjects, and this one was no different. Of all the episodes we've done, I think this one has aged instantly. After the recording, the very same day, we had more news about GROK and X's content and different countries and governments looking at that and kind of having thoughts about it. So this story is kind of developing as we're talking, but as we stand, for us in the UK, the UK government are looking into what they're going to do about this. And like we said, we obviously have our opinions, right? But I think they are definitely, going to bring the gavel down and make some judgment. And the faster they do that, the better. I'm talking on the 12th of January, and they still haven't come out with anything. But again, this might all change in hours or minutes from this recording. So hopefully we'll have moved on by the next episode. Thanks again for your support, your listening, being around, being interested in this subject in the podcast in 2025. This is actually the year of the 10th year anniversary of the Machine Ethics podcast. So we'll be doing more things, hopefully more in-person things, recordings, hopefully some more discussion panels, some streaming. We're going to try some things out, and hopefully you will stick around for some of that stuff. You know, this subject isn't going away, and it's only becoming more interesting, more fascinating as technology and people get involved with it. So thanks again. If you could do one thing for me in 2026, that is probably be nicer to everyone. If you could do two things though, you could tell your friends about the podcast. That would be fabulous. Everyone should be nice to each other. Tell your friends about the podcast. Follow, sign up wherever you get your podcast. Go to the Patreon, patreon.com/machineethics. And yeah, keep on keeping on. Have a great year. And I will speak to you very, very soon with the next episode on machine ethics coming out very soon. Thank you very much. And I'll speak to you then.